WIOX is supported by Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. WIOX is supported by Mountain Flame in Arkville, featuring a range of products for home heating solutions. A variety of fireplaces, wood stoves, and gas and pellet stoves are available and on display. For sales and service, Mountain Flame in Arkville, warming home since 1980. Details at mountainflame.com. WIOX is supported by Chappie's Good Food Cafe in Roxbury. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. Indoor dining, outdoor dining, pickup, delivery. Open weekdays at 12 noon, weekends at 11 a.m. With a menu designed to be eclectic with simply prepared quality ingredients. Wings, pizza, burgers, and steaks. Local smoked trout, crab cakes, and daily fish specials. Local beers and special cocktails. Chappie's Good Food Cafe, Main Street in Roxbury. Chappie'sGoodFood.com, 607-326-7020. 607-326-7020.
Hi, I'm John Madio, host of the Little Delaware Jamboree, an Americana music show, Monday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. here on WIOX Roxbury. We are community radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
Okay, you're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and everywhere at WIOXRadio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the Radio.fm app. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good. You've been busy. Still pruning apple trees, you know, those wild apple trees, some planted apple trees around the Catskills since January 2nd, coming to a close March 31st. Move on to grafting with the Catskill Forest Association, but other than that, ended maple sugaring season. That means spring's here.
Yeah, that's the official stamp.
That's right. You know, what about you, John?
Same with me. This last weekend and week has really been the peak and the end of my maple season. But yeah, we'll talk about that in more detail later.
Yeah, tonight we're going to talk about the spotted lanternfly, and we've talked about it before with Penn State University's Heather Leach. Tonight's going to be more of a New York State focus. You know, a lot of it's from what the DEC has provided. And then we're going to stop that, and we're going to move on to the, you know, a little bit of a informal backyard sugaring report from John and I. So
the official recap of the season.
That's right. You know, and which should be kind of cool because John's in Delaware County and up in elevation. I'm a little further down the hill in Ulster County, so something cool. All right, so look out for the spotted lanternfly, right? I've been hearing a little bit about this, and I thought I'd just get people ready for this. The emerald ash borer took people by surprise, took foresters by surprise when it was discovered near Saugerties and Ruby, Ulster County. I don't even remember when that was. You know, I don't. It was 2010 plus or minus. I don't know.
Wasn't it a dead individual, though? It wasn't. Maybe I'm wrong by that.
The emerald ash borer?
Oh, emerald ash borer. I thought you were talking about spotted lanternfly.
I moved my house in 2012, and I think it was just before that. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right. So this is the Latin name is Lycorma delicatola, I guess. Invasive from Asia, like many of them. And it feeds primarily on Ailanthus, which is tree of heaven.
That's another invasive plant, tree.
Yeah, it's a weird tree because it's very brittle. And some people might even call it, what, the palm tree of the north? It is made of wood, so it's not a monocot like a blade of grass or something. But it is made of wood, but very brittle. You'll see it more so as you get to the Hudson Valley, not around here.
Yep, you come into Kingston off of 209 heading towards, like, the mall. It's all along the side of the road right there, lots of it. If you travel that route, you might be able to look out your car window to see it quickly.
Yeah, so, some people do plant the tree. But, again, I don't think the deer browse it too much, and it's got a competitive advantage over others. It also just grows really fast,
yeah,
from what I know.
Yeah, we've got a member in Dutchess County I've done some cutting for habitat management. He does a lot of food plots, too, for deer. He claims that the Ailanthus seed will outgrow his corn in a cornfield. If that says anything about how fast it can grow.
Really? It also feeds on the, spotted lanternfly. Also feeds on grapevine, hops, maple, walnut, fruit trees, and others. Supposedly... Zane, who works for the Catskill Forest Association, he attended a webinar. I guess it doesn't feed on apple as much as they thought, but grapevine's pretty bad.
Yeah, and he...
And maple.
Yeah, he mentioned maple as well.
Yeah, so those two trees. Also feeds on, this doesn't really pertain to us, almonds, apricots, cherries, nectarines, oak trees, peaches, pine trees, plums, poplar trees, sycamore trees, and willow trees. 70 plants in all. So quite a bit.
Fairly non-selective and not good for certain industries, I see.
Yeah, it's first discovered in Pennsylvania in 2014, and since then has been found in New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, and now New York. So we just had our first infestation in Staten Island, and that was in August of 2020. All right, welcome.
Another pest.
It's a pretty little guy.
Yeah, red spot. All sorts of different colors on them.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty one, you know.
So my wife did some work in New Jersey, I would say summer of 2019. And she saw some swarms of them. And she says the swarms are absolutely disgusting.
Really?
They can congregate in swarms of hundreds or thousands on trees, and they land on you, and she doesn't like that.
That's
she
what
doesn't,
I hear.
She doesn't like ladybugs either.
You don't like ladybugs?
No.
I got ladybugs all around my house.
They're good.
Yeah, don't they eat aphids and stuff?
Yeah, they're predators.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind them. You know, though, the little guy, my son Tanner, his eye freaking swelled up shut because he rubbed a ladybug into his eye. So now he doesn't like ladybugs.
Rightfully so. Yeah. Join the club with my wife.
See, you can't do that. You can't rub them into your eye, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of insects do that, though. There's that, what's that one that's white? I always forget the name of it.
A white insect?
It's a white caterpillar, fuzzy guy.
Oh, I don't know the name either.
It'll
actually
make your hands itch, and you'll get a reaction.
Sure, I've seen that on a few people.
Yeah. Yep. I picked it up once to just show a member that it wasn't another caterpillar that they thought. And then that day, I'm driving home, and I'm like, man, my hand itches. And I was like, what did I touch? Yeah, it was that little guy. So you got to be careful about that sometimes. Anyway, IDing him. How do you ID this insect, the spotted lanternfly? So nymphs, which are like, you know, baby insects, are black with white spots, and they turn red. They turn a really brilliant red, kind of pretty again, before they transition to adults. And the adults are seen as early as April. They're about 1 inch long by a half inch wide. They got some fancy wings.
Right.
And when they're in the adult stage, they are pretty. The forewings are grayish with black spots. Lower portions of the hind wings are red with black spots. Probably the best thing to do is to just go online and, you know, do a web search. Images.
Yes, that's the reason why they're called lantern flies. When their wings are spread out, they look like a glowing lantern, I guess.
Oh, yeah, okay. That makes sense. I got this little card right here. I don't know. Has a picture of it. But, yeah, they're not that big. In the fall, the adults lay eggs 1 inch long in egg masses. And they're laid on tree trunks, rocks, vehicles, firewood. They're laid on just about everything. Eggs hatch in the spring, and there's about 30 to 40 in each one of those. So if you can kill those egg masses while they're in there, it might be helpful. The new egg masses are smooth and brownish gray with shiny waxy coating, and the old ones are brown and scaly. That's true with a lot of other insects, like caterpillars, eastern tent caterpillar, forest tent caterpillar. If you see little shiny cylindrical things on the twigs, those are new ones, and if you want to, you should probably kill those if you want to protect your fruit trees because they will defoliate the leaves. And the old ones are more scaly as well. So, something to look out for. Sooty mold. Get these questions a lot. You ever see a maple tree driving around and its bark is black?
Sooty mold?
Yeah, it's sooty mold.
All of them, fun fact, you go down to the distilleries in Kentucky and Tennessee, all of the trees, doesn't matter what species, within a mile, I would say, around those big distilleries like Jack Daniel's and Four Roses, all the big ones.
Yeah.
Black, covered in sooty mold.
Why?
It's something that's...
You're saying something to do with the distillery?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why the hell would it have something to do with the distillery?
The person giving my tour at the distillery didn't know. That's my most interesting portion. I wanted to know why, so yet to look that up.
Well, there's one in my backyard that has sooty mold on it, and... It's getting attacked, this maple tree, by sapsuckers for whatever reason. It's not doing well before it did that, so I think it has root damage. And it's a little clay soil, so it's poorly drained. Anyway, the sapsuckers have been nailing it, and as the sap of the tree comes out onto the bark, a sooty mold, which I think is a fungus, attacks that and causes it to turn black. Doesn't kill the tree, just looks not nice, not good. Not nice. It's not good. So
we'll have to learn why these distilleries have trees covered in sooty mold all around them.
I mean, I don't know. Did you go outside of the area where there was, in that area where there's no sewage, or you just hang around drinking and then thinking there was only sooty mold around the distilleries?
Probably that, but no. Well, the thing is a lot of these distilleries are in towns and they're in close proximity. So I think that was the reason why I saw it. And they're all on these estate roads. You come in and all the trees on the way in.
Huh.
On this estate road, are just black.
Yeah. Some kind of aphid or something.
Yeah, well, what really caught my attention is someone in the tour group asked the tour guide, is this a black oak? And it was black in color, that's why. And she said yes, and I had to roll my eyes and think about that one for a minute, but didn't speak up.
Didn't speak up?
No, it was not a black oak.
Was it even an oak?
It was an oak.
All right. They got so many oaks down there, I wouldn't know sometimes.
Yeah, it was more pin oak looking.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Scarlet or something.
Maybe scarlet red. I guess they hybridize too. Confuses things. So with the spotted lanternfly, as it feeds on the sap of the tree through the bark, it exudes a honeydew, in air quotes, because it's not, you know, honeydew, but this sugary substance that sooty mold feeds upon. So that's where the whole connection of the sooty mold. And if you see that, it's probably not spotted lanternfly, but it could be in our you know, not too distant future here.
Right. And basically what I researched about them, they're just such poor digesters that they take in the sugars of the sap or the fruit or whatever they're feeding on, and it goes through them so quickly, it comes out the other side and is ready to rot.
No kidding.
And sooty mold, yeah. Huh. Such high sugar content in their excrement.
So, I mean, I don't blame it for feeding on the sap of a maple tree. You know, it's probably the best one.
Or grapes.
Grapes.
I could down a bag of grapes for lunch.
Yeah. I did, actually. They're gone. So, there's that. We had them at the office. They're all gone. This could affect New York State quite a bit. First of all, the honeydew also attracts bees, wasps, ants as well. So that's something else to look out for. But, you know, the apples and grapes in New York State yield about supposedly $358 million that could be potentially impacted. So we'll see. The full economic impacts are not clear yet. We just don't know. According to Penn State University, spotted lanternfly is currently considered a nuisance. And no plant has been documented as dying yet, except for ailanthus, grape, and small tree seedlings. So it's really a cosmetic or an aesthetic thing that's annoying. I don't think anyone really thinks it's good for the tree because sucking the sap out of a tree is not probably good, you know. I mean, they're probably sucking a lot more sap than we tap on a tree to get its sap.
Right, especially when they swarm in high densities.
Yeah.
How are their mouth parts? I mean, are they feeding straight through like a thicker barked tree, or are they attacking these upper young growth, possibly?
That's a good question. I don't know. You know, I don't know that.
I don't know either.
Yeah, they didn't really say, like, is it a smooth-barked maple when it's young, growing fast, or is it attacking that old gnarly, ridged-barked maple tree out front? That's a good question. Yeah, that would matter.
Definitely, especially with young and old.
Yeah.
Those intermediate trees are likely going to survive, I would think.
But the good news is we're not seeing death yet in Pennsylvania from this going on, so... they lay eggs on, again, vehicles, firewood, outdoor furniture, stone, etc. We already kind of talked about that, but signs of infestation, sap oozing from tiny wounds on tree trunks, right? Because they're piercing into the bark, into the phloem, where the sugary substances of the tree. Appears wet and may give off fermented odors. So there you go, John. Fermented odors. The first 1-inch-long egg masses, brownish, gray, waxy, and mud-like when new. Old egg masses, like I said before, are brown and scaly. Current controls. So what do you do? I don't know. Right now, there's not much going on, but the DEC is working with the Department of Ag and Markets, Agriculture and Markets, and the USDA, trying to find out where it is and treat infestations early. I think some of our members, or one person, said that they saw some trapping devices found. It may have been this. There's trapping surveys going on, inspections of nursery stock, stone shipments, commercial transport. So there's probably, just like the emerald ash borer, when those purple prisms were put out to see where the emerald ash borer was, you may come across this stuff. I don't know. Have you seen any?
I have seen nothing, but I do remember the purple boxes hanging from ash trees.
Yeah, I have seen nothing, too. So, there you go. I don't know where they're putting them. Probably on the borders of Pennsylvania and New Jersey, I hope. But, yeah.
Yeah, along the travel corridors.
Right. Interstates, you know. When studies were done, I went to a conference for the International Society of Arborists, and they found, looking back at the data, that the emerald ash borer spread where the interstates are, spreading on people's cars. At first it was thought firewood, and firewood spreads it, but really it's just cars driving around. I mean, think about all the bugs you hit and that don't die and get stuck like underneath the hood or in the rear well or something. And think about where it was first discovered. Saugerties, right off the thruway.
Right.
And then they saw that it followed the I-90 corridor, then 87, then Route 28, which is a big artery into the Catskills. So that's where it's going to be. Places that have fewer roads or, like, more town roads or county roads, like Bovina, will be hit the latest. So, to this day, I think the healthiest ash trees, anecdotally, are in Bovina because they're farthest away from the major roads.
Yeah, Bovina and Delhi. I live about, as the bug flies, maybe 2 miles from the town of Bovina.
Right.
Or maybe less. And the ash tree standing in my yard, you looked at it this week. Looks very healthy.
Yeah, I couldn't tell anything about it.
And I'm just waiting. I'm actually kind of anxious for it to show signs so I could feel decent about cutting it down.
Yeah.
It's shading out. In the future, it would shade out my apple tree.
Right.
I planted an apple tree not far away.
Yeah. So, there you go. Yeah, I'd say Bovina's still lacking in it, and they'll probably see the spotted lanternfly, you know, not as early as other areas.
Yeah. According to Zane Lawyer, Catskill Forest Association, he says the spotted lanternfly is a very poor flyer, similar to emerald ash borer. You know, by natural movement, emerald ash borer only moved 3 to 5 miles per year.
Oh, yeah?
That's what I've read.
Yep.
And spotted lanternfly, maybe the same. I don't know.
Yeah, I believe it. So if you're just tuning in, tonight's topic is looking out for the spotted lanternfly. And up next, we'll talk about the exterior quarantine that the DC has put on.
This heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut tree. I wish you well. I'll be seeing you every lovely summer's day. Everything that's light and gay, always think of you that way. And I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is blue, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you. Be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
That's Willie Nelson. About a million people have sang that song, but that one's by Willie Nelson. And this is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. And tonight's topic is look out for the spotted lanternfly. It's moving our way. It's been found in Staten Island. It's on the Sullivan County border. Has it been found in Sullivan County yet? It'd be amazing if it hadn't.
I do not know. There has been, as far as I know, there's been two interior Catskill or New York State counties, but found dead.
Right.
No living species.
Yeah, no living ones, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could. There was nothing on DC's website that says that anything was found yet, other than Staten Island.
Yeah, I actually think even a Delaware County one was found dead. Must have just hitchhiked in a car, though.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Oh, so what are we talking about? Exterior quarantine. I don't know if these things work. Sometimes they do. Since it's a poor flyer, it might work to quarantine, like the Asian longhorn beetle, which has been quarantined in Staten Island, I think. One of the boroughs down there in the city. For a number of years, actually. But in order, let's see, restricts movement of goods from quarantine areas in Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia. Regulates articles such as packing materials, landscaping and construction equipment, and nursery stock. These items require certificates of inspection from the state they're coming from, I believe. So that's that on your exterior quarantine. Who does that? That would be, you know, John?
I don't, but likely Ag and Markets.
Yeah, and APHIS. So Ag and Markets is the state of New York, Agriculture and Markets. And then they usually work together with the feds. That's a USDA APHIS, which is an acronym for Animal Plant
Inspection something? Service?
I don't know. Yeah, I can't remember what the H is for. I don't know if there is an H in there, but yeah, no, I'm pretty sure there is. But yeah, anyway, they do animal and plant something inspection, and that's what they would do. If they don't do it, then basically it's, what, the 10th Amendment, and it goes down to the states. It would be Department of Ag and Markets or both. So one of the two. All right. So what are we doing now? Protective zones. They've also established protective zones, meaning the DEC, in order to detect and respond. The DEC has established 20 counties located near New Jersey-Pennsylvania border. And this is probably where a lot of those surveys are. Allows surveying, monitoring, and management to find, prevent the spread. And the, I'm not going to list all 20, but the counties near the Catskills include Broome, Chemung, Delaware, Dutchess, Green, Orange, Otsego, Sullivan, and Ulster. So, there you go. I still haven't seen anything.
No.
But it doesn't mean much.
But it's not quite the growing season, so maybe this season we'll see stuff popping up.
True. Because they emerge in April, so maybe we'll see something. So be on the lookout, because April is, like, next week.
Wow.
I kid you not. Which means I got to get on firewood, man. April is firewood month for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, when do you do firewood?
I'm pretty much always doing firewood, but yeah. I stick to the shoulder months.
Yeah.
Never in the heat of winter, or summer, rather.
No. Yeah.
And
you don't want to split wood when it's 95 degrees out?
Absolutely not.
It's good for your pores. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I sweat enough.
It's detoxifying.
I sweat enough doing other things when it's 95.
Yeah, but when you split wood and it's 95 in the sunlight, you sweat a lot more.
Is that when you're splitting wood? Tell me.
No. I usually get it done in April. But once in a while, yeah, once in a while I will do it. I don't know. I just happen to have wood around, you know, like an angry beaver, you know, that hears running water through a dam and doesn't like the sound of it. Sometimes, like the other day, I got done doing whatever I was doing, maple sugaring. I didn't have to go collect my buckets until the afternoon. So I'm sitting there in the morning. I start eyeing that wood line and say, man, that tree has got to come down over there. That's when you start eyeing, just walking up and down the forest edge with a chainsaw.
Just looking for the next
looking
one.
For that firewood tree.
And down it came.
Down it came. You know, ask my neighbor, and just willy-nilly pick a tree. I mean, it was a red maple competing with some nice sugar maple. Red's going. Red's gone. On the ground.
I agree.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same. I cut a bunch of trees. Feeling sorry for the deer, actually. It's like middle of February. And I had to test a upgrade to my chainsaw fleet.
Oh, yeah.
So,
that's right.
I got a new 28-inch bar, Sugihara, on the big saw. I had to go cut like a 10-inch tree down with it just to test it.
Yeah?
Well, I cut a few, and I cut them up, blocked them, and then it was like so deep in snow. I was like, I'm not moving this. Let the deer have them. Browse the buds, and I'll come back in the spring. And well, now it's spring, so I got to get on those trees in the woods.
Yep. You should have seen that thing spurting some sap a few days ago.
I bet.
Oh, my God. It was soaking wet, man. It was wet. Yeah, the red maples do run later, it seems, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know.
I tapped that tree in the front. That red maple didn't run. Sugar maples were running.
Right. I think they start later, but they also end about the same time, if not a little early.
At least
they start dropping sugar content. That's for sure. And it's not worth it.
Yeah, I believe that. All right. So what are we looking for here?
Spotted lanternfly, what to do if you find some?
Oh, yeah. What do you do? What can you do? You just sit in a corner and cry? Like, what do you do, John?
Well, yeah, if a good Cry in the Dark song comes on, you can't waste it.
I got a lot of those. You ever listen to Telephone Line? It's a great Cry in the Dark song.
Yeah, yeah.
I think each decade, you got to come up. We got to do it one of these shows where we get each decade the best Cry in the Dark song from that decade.
I heard one while I was blowing sap the other night, and I didn't write it down. I can't remember, but I was going to bring it up to you. You would have loved it. It's one that's so obvious, but we don't talk about.
Yeah.
And then I forgot what it was.
Well, you got to remember it. I'll play it.
I got to write it down.
You know, I'm always looking for some music to play. I mean, I just played Willie Nelson singing I'll Be Seeing You. You know, I'm getting a little low here on content. Anyway, so what can you do if you see the spotted lanternfly? First, you need to just learn how to identify this thing. This one's pretty easy. Once you see a picture of it, you'll never forget it. It's beautiful. Looks like a lantern. It's got red and black on it, and I'm not going to begin to describe it, but it's pretty. Inspect outdoor items. Firewood, vehicles, furniture. Look for those egg masses. They'll be hidden. If you find it, you can take a picture of it, the insect or the egg masses or signs of infestation. Remember that sooty mold, honeydew, and email it to spottedlanternfly@agriculture.ny.gov. Or the USDA also has a form you can download and send it to them as well. They're probably going to want to know the location of it. But there are some lookalikes. There's a figured tiger moth and the pink underwing buck moth, grapevine epimenis. I don't know how to say that. But anyway, I looked at them. They don't really look that much alike to me, but whatever. You know. Hey, when the Asian longhorn beetle was trendy, there's a lot of people bringing in white pine sawyers and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, they look very similar.
They do, except for the spots are different.
Yeah, but
one has two, one has one or something.
Exactly, unless you knew... You know, how many spots have on each? No.
If we get the Asian longhorn beetle up here, I quit.
That's it.
That's it, man.
Where are you going?
I don't know. I mean, come on. You know? Well, you imagine no maple trees to tap. Well, what would you do with your spring, late winter? What would you do?
You know,
twiddle your thumbs you would do.
Because I'd get my firewood done in March. Not April.
That's about it, yeah. Probably get your firewood. You'd have a lot of firewood. You've had a lot of sugar maple firewood is what you would have.
Right.
That'd be depressing, huh? Anyway, I hope that doesn't happen. It hasn't happened yet. Remember they discovered it in Worcester, Massachusetts. Didn't spread to Vermont. I don't know how. You know? Isn't that amazing? When that happened, I was like, it's over. But somehow it didn't spread, I guess, to Vermont from Worcester, Mass. I don't know. But anyway, let's talk about spotted lanternfly. We're almost done here, and then we'll talk about the maple sugaring season. So controls in infested areas like PA. So there is biological controls that they're doing over there. No, there's not. There's nothing they're doing for biological controls.
<It's> like...
they're looking for biological controls. That would be insects, parasitoids, bacteria. Only observed death so far. This is a good thing. Is on Ailanthus. Grapevines and small tree seedlings. They haven't witnessed it killing any other trees yet. It's mostly cosmetic damage, honeydew, sooty mold once again.
Well, the biggest issue is with the vineyards in that industry with wine.
Yeah, it's not good.
Because even if it doesn't kill the vine, which, like you said, it very rarely does, it coats the fruit in sooty mold, and then it's done.
It's unusable, I would imagine.
Yeah, the crop is unusable.
Yeah.
So...
Unless you want some spotted lanternfly flavored wine.
Probably not.
Yeah. Not good. Damn. What, you saw some of this?
Yeah, I saw a webinar this last winter.
You did?
There was a whole day-long thing. It was hard to watch because I was in and out of the office, but I had it on all day.
Yeah.
And it was just in the background. And maybe saw 2 of the 8 hours of content.
Jesus, John.
But it didn't make me an expert.
It's really boring, huh?
Well, because it was a boring day in the office.
Jeez.
Basically, the highlights of what I saw was a video. It was disgusting of how quickly they excrement that sooty or the honeydew.
Yeah.
The density of infestation was, you can see how they can decimate an entire vineyard. And then I saw that there was a found individual in Delaware County, but it was dead.
Hmm.
Those are the highlights of the hour or two that I watched.
Yeah. Those are the takeaways?
That I remember, yes.
Yeah.
Basically, there's not a lot known left. Yeah, I mean, we're still learning. There's not a lot of control options yet. Easy control with pesticides, fairly, I guess, from what I've heard. But yeah. Hard to prevent the outbreaks. So you can treat and control current outbreaks once they emerge. But yeah. It's probably after they've done their damage.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, I don't know. I hope the best. Maybe it stays away. There's some cultural things you can do. You can remove some host plants, like ailanthus or tree of heaven, same thing.
Oh, that's another thing they were doing. In a stand of ailanthus, they were removing all but one to concentrate the infestation because they're that attracted to it. And then they can kill a whole bunch at once.
Ah, attract them and kill, huh?
Yeah.
I get it.
Baited trap.
Bait trap. Nice. The old bait and switch, huh? Or that's not what that is. Whatever. Doesn't matter. I get it. Also remove Oriental bittersweet or wild grapevine. I don't know. Good luck removing those two.
Yeah, it's everywhere, right?
I don't know, man. Mechanical, right. You could scrape off egg masses and put them in alcohol. You can use sticky bands or traps to trap climbing nymphs as they climb up the main stem or trunk. So you can do that. This one was my favorite. They actually recommended this on Pennsylvania State University's website, and it was vacuum.
Oh.
Spotted lanternfly from the trees. You believe this?
See,
that's awesome.
That's what I mean. We're resulting to vacuuming. I don't think we have the known controls under grasp yet.
Jesus. I don't know, man. Yeah, all right. So, okay, so you could do that. I don't know who's going to do it, but you get your shop vac out. Start vacuuming. Spotted lanternflies. Chemical. You could use contacts using horticultural oil, systemics, which is like, a drench, a basil bark spray, an injection. However, check the label. I don't know which are legal in New York State. I went to Cornell's website, and I guess there are a lot, which I was surprised, so...
I would imagine that systemic trunk injection would be likely the way to go, especially if you have ailanthus. Then cut your ailanthus, take care of that problem you've probably been wanting to control for a while. Now it's an excuse to do it. Leave one behind, inject that tree, and boom, got it.
I would think the most practical for the money would be a basil bark spray. I would think. I don't know.
Oh, if so it absorbs through the bark.
Yeah, just because injections are very expensive. Trunk injections. Drenches, the D.C. frown seems to frown upon a little more.
I could see why.
And especially if in Long Island where they have sandy soils, they're not going to legalize that. So probably basil bark spray might be the something, but we'll see. Adults can be seen feeding for weeks on a quote-unquote hot tree. So I guess for some reason they get in their little bug brains to go after a tree they just like, and they swarm it. So you can. That's a time to kill them or vacuum them, according to Pennsylvania State University. You can vacuum them then. That'd be awesome. I just want a picture of someone doing it.
Yeah,
right?
Get the shot. Something industrial though, like a vacuum truck. Yeah. Ever see those? They're sucking out gutter systems.
That'd be awesome. All right. So okay. Good time to get them then. Yeah. Feeding varies by month and on particular plants, so they don't all. Yeah, like they'll feed on maple certain times of year, and they'll feed on garden plants a certain time of year. So it varies. So that's all I got, man, on the spotted lanternfly.
Well, I think you did a good job researching it and covering it as we know now.
Yeah, so now we're all caught up in New York State, and we'll see when it spreads throughout the other counties. So you're just tuning in. You're listening to From the Forest, and we have been talking about looking out for the spotted lanternfly. You can always go to DEC's website for that. And up next, we're going to talk more about the maple sugaring season, how it's been going.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed. But I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the
saying I just can't make it.
Tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and we were talking about the spotted lanternfly, and now we're going to switch gears and talk about the 2021 maple sugaring season. That was America's Sister Golden Hair. Yeah, maple sugaring. So
how'd it go? Oh, man, you got to ask me first.
Oh, man.
I would summarize it with short and sweet.
Man.
Nah, it was, I would say.
Well, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. I would say average yield in a fast and furious time frame.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm getting reports from our friend there, Warren, from Choking Turf and Timber, and other Marty Giuliano, who will be on the radio show coming up here from West Choking, talk about maple sugaring.
Great.
That it's been average, but that was a week ago, and it's been fast and furious the last 4 days. There's been a lot of sap. With these warmer temperatures, and it froze at night. It'd get down to 28 where I was, and then bam, into the 50s, it just ran.
Yep, same with me. I made 50% of my year's yield in 5 days.
Yeah,
and crazy. I was tapped. I tapped trees on February 23rd, and I'm going to pull taps tonight when I get home.
Yep.
On March 24th. So 1 month, and I made 50% in 5 days.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I tapped about the same time.
Yeah.
I think we tapped around the same time, which is very unusual because I live at, 900 feet or so, and John's at, 14,
16, 16
yeah.
change.
Okay. Yeah, so that's unusual. And I pulled about 3 days before that you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, you need freezing nights, as a lot of people don't realize. You need those freezing nights, so... They'll run for 24 hours, sometimes a little more without freezing, but then they shut off. So,
yeah, so put it this way. I got up early to collect this morning because I knew it ran all night. The temperatures said so, and it froze two nights ago. So it set the stage for a great run, and I collected 5 gallons this morning before work. And I said, you know what, if it didn't run last night, it's not going to run freeze the next 4 nights.
Right.
Tomorrow's going to be almost 70 degrees and sunny.
Yeah.
It's over.
Oh, yeah. The moths start coming in and infiltrating the buckets and the ants and everything as well.
Yep.
Turning it yellow. And, the sap starts to smell like wet dog hair. And that's just not good.
No. It gets a metallic flavor in the syrup, it seems.
Yellow.
Not good.
Not good. Not good. So... I did a little comparison, and it turns out this is my 15th year doing maple sugaring.
All right.
Jesus Christ.
Your award is in the mail.
Huh? No, there's no award. I'm just like 15 years already. Started doing this in 2007. I started with 17 taps at Frost Valley. I used to be their program instructor there, and I wanted to make – they have a commercial, like a big sugar bush there with an evaporator – I wanted to show people backyard sugaring and work it into the outdoor education program just to demonstrate it. So I did 17 taps, and ironically, or coincidentally rather, I tapped 17 now. So I peaked in between those 2021 and 2007, I peaked at around 60 to 70 taps. But, yeah, I'm tapping the same amount. And that first year, I made 4.4 gallons of syrup. And this year, I made almost 12. So what happened?
You picked the right trees, I guess.
Yeah, man, there's a few reasons. Back then, I was really about being a purist. I did everything by hand. Used a bracing bit to tap the trees, right? And made spiles out of staghorn sumac and striped maple. And you put the spiles on the ground. It works. Use my buckets. I use buckets that were just recycled plastic jugs from the cafeteria there, dining hall. And used a bake pan, stainless steel, 55-gallon drum, you know. But the biggest difference is the trees, right? And this is – I find a lot of people don't realize this. This is and why would you? So the trees at Frost Valley are all dense, and they're growing in a pretty dense forest. Those trees that are suffering for sunlight, it was about 50 to 1, meaning I had to boil down 50 gallons of sap to make one stinking gallon of syrup. They're about 1.5% sugar content.
Wow.
Yeah. And that year I tapped in late February. I was pretty eager, and then it got really cold. And now Frost Valley is really high in elevations, 2,100 feet. So you get a longer season, or rather a later season there than other places. Margaritaville's 1,400 feet for comparison. Boiled to the bitter end. Second week in April, pulled my taps that year. And but this year, three times more. So the difference is a few things. One is the trees. So if you want to tap some trees, look for the big crown trees. And, I don't have reverse osmosis or any of that stuff. So instead of looking for technology, I got to look for technology in the trees. And scaffolding of the trees. Bigger the crown, that means they're getting more sunlight during the summer. Those trees are typically anywhere from 2.2 to 2.8%. So about 33 to 1.
Very nice.
You know? That's what you're going to find from yard maples most of the time. What else? Oh, then I switched to one tap per tree. That was a big change too, man. So now I'm getting higher sugar contents because I'm tapping bigger trees. But one tap per tree, you get so much more sap. I remember hearing a guy in Ohio did this, and then I dug up an old study by Cornell in the 1950s. I think you get 30% less sap on that second tap or something like that. But if you're a backyard sugar guy, chances are you got more trees than you can tap. So if you do one tap per tree, you're gonna have so much more sap. So for example, if you get a 2 gallon per day sap yield, that's called a big run. Right. 2 gallons of sap per tap. So 17 taps I was getting almost 47 to 48 gallons of sap sometimes.
So you're close to 2.5.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Wow.
And I looked at my records, and when I used to tap 2 and 3 buckets on a tree, I never got – I mean, it was rare I ever got 2 gallons of sap per tap. Very rare. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So I can't stress that enough, is putting one tap per tree no matter the size. It really does help. Then the other thing is just – making the process easier is sapwood, or the evaporator for one. Having something that's sealed, that's made for maple sugaring, sealed, and it's not leaking smoke and heat out. It's got fire brick in it to reflect the heat towards the pan. Fire brick is makes such a difference on efficiency, stuff like that. But then sapwood, right? What do you use for sapwood?
This year I started burning what was left over from last year, and that was a mix of hemlock and aspen.
Yeah.
Now, which I'll finish on tonight, because I do have a little bit of sap to boil when I get home, that 5 gallons and plus whatever ran today, I'll finish on white pine, mostly white pine, still mixed with a little bit of aspen.
Yeah, that's a good mix. I think that's one of the best mix, probably.
Yeah. I think I messed up on my timing of cutting that pine, though, because it's
yeah,
it's not as good as I thought it'd be, and not as good as you described.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little water in there.
All right. Yeah, it could be. Because that stuff's like gasoline.
Yeah,
it's, when it's dry.
This is not. The hemlock was much better, so
yeah,
I must need to let this pine dry a little more. So I'll cut my white pine this year and soon, maybe in April.
Oh, yeah.
Let it go all summer.
Nice thing about white pine is no one wants it. It'll be on the side of the road forever, and it stays forever.
Mm.
Like, it doesn't rot in log length on the side of the road for a long time.
Okay.
So you can cut that 3, 4, 5 years later and still be fine.
Nice.
I've done it. Hemlock's great. Sassafras, as you get to the Hudson Valley, is great. Aspen, as you said, or poplar, is awesome. That's a heavy wood, though. It loses a lot of moisture, but it dries in a hurry.
Yeah, if that one, if you're moving it, I would recommend cutting it and splitting it where it's at and then going back a month or two later to go pick it up. Otherwise, you're going to beat the crap out of your truck.
Especially if your payload or whatever is not up to speed.
It's so significant. When you go back to pick it up, you're going to, think you're going to throw your back out, pick it up, and it's going to feel like a feather.
Absolutely. It's really remarkable. Yeah, and I looked that up one time. The USDA has seasoning of, how much moisture each wood species loses, and aspen's like one of the most. The amount of water it loses. Some don't, like ash. Ash doesn't have much moisture to lose, but yeah. You wanna sapwood is the best sapwood is one that doesn't leave a lot of coals to choke out the fire. And hemlock's good too, yeah. Larch is good, or tamarack.
You also don't want a lot of coals when it's time to call it a night.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't when it's you let the stop adding wood and 10-15 minutes later you're down to hardly anything.
Absolutely. Catalpa, I've burned black walnut. They're all good. And I'm going to burn this coming year, and I have a feeling it's going to be very good because as I picked it up, it was light as a feather, is white cedar. Someone had me cut down big white cedar trees in Stone Ridge, Ulster County, and that should be good too.
I was offered some blue spruce today. I might take a load of it just to see.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I couldn't split it. It's unsplittable when I got it.
Blue spruce?
I could not split it.
That's what I thought about, too. There's a lot of branches, so that means it's probably going to be hard to split.
I was just like, I could not split it. But you know what? Maybe after seasons or something, I don't know. But maple's like that. You ever notice when you cut down a maple tree, it'll a freshly cut sugar maple tree is really hard to split. Just a week later when it's blocked up, it's much easier to split.
Hmm.
Yeah. Red maple, you can split whenever, but not sugar maple. That's what I've found.
I haven't split a lot of sugar maple.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
Wouldn't know.
Yeah. What else? So, yeah, backyard sugaring, it was a good year this year. I can't complain. A lot of sap. I don't know. It was a good winter, We had snow. Nothing to complain about. I mean, to be honest, this winter was very wintry. It wasn't like last year when it was 36 degrees every day and raining. And the fall was beautiful fall weather. Summer was great summer. Wasn't too hot. Wasn't too cool.
Yep.
And the spring was beautiful as well. So hopefully this year will be the same. I don't know.
I was looking back at my records a little bit. I go back to 2013 and the backyard status. And I've usually averaged 12 to 17 collections. I mean, that's how many days I go out and collect sap. 12 to 17 times.
Yeah.
They've ranged from the second week of January all the way to the first week in April throughout my records.
Yeah.
And but most of them are concentrated, obviously, to the month of March.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now you say that, I number each batch that I make of syrup.
Yeah.
I think there was like 12 or 13 this year.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And I made about 6.5 gallons on about 300 gallons of sap.
Yeah. Nice.
Kind of fun to look over those types of numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody breaks it down to like, the percent, and that's the only way to compare equally.
Yeah.
Is to go all the way down to the, common denominator. But I like to see, what'd you handle in the backyard and what'd you do?
Yep. Absolutely.
I lifted 5-gallon buckets, 300 gallons of them.
I know. I think a few years ago I added up how many gallons of syrup I lifted up and how much equated that to weight, and then added up the amount of sapwood and added that to weight and stuff.
Yeah, you equate that to your gym membership. And
You get in shape. You get in shape, that's for sure. There's no doubt about it. A pint of syrup is plus or minus about 5 gallons of sap, you know. So, depending on your sugar content. So, every time you pour that 5 gallon, you lift up a 5 gallon pail, that's about a pint.
Yep.
Sometimes it could be more. It can be somewhere almost to a quart, depending on your sugar. But
yeah, people come over and watch me boil and hang out with me sometimes. And I always like to point out how much syrup I have in my pan right now. I'm always thinking about that, how many gallons I've boiled. And there's about a half a gallon in the pan right now. I don't think they realize what I'm talking about until I explain it, you know, once it's fully concentrated.
You got to say these sayings have meaning, you know. It's what it boils down to, right? That's where it comes to. Or, you know, it's like when you're doing tree work, you're out on a limb. All these things, you start to realize where they come from.
Right.
You know? But anyway, that's all the time we have on From the Forest. And the next week or month or so, we got all guests. So we should have a lot of good speakers coming up. We got Paul Misko next week. And after that, he's going to talk a little bit about history, I think. After that, we got Peter Gench from Hudson Valley Lab, who knows a lot about apple trees and stuff.
Cool.
And we got some Overlook Mountain Association, conservation or whatever, talk about Native American stuff they're finding up on the mountain. All sorts of stuff. So stay tuned and see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town,